Hi, this is Growing Up Aspen with Andy Collin and Chris Pomeroy, and today we're here interviewing Adam Kane, who I was yearbook photographer all the way to Hollywood cinematographer, producer, director. He's done a lot of films, Boondock Saints, he's worked on American Gods, the TV show, and he's here with us today. So yeah, here is Adam Kane.
What I like about what you guys are doing is that we're accessing the threads of growth and development and looking across a lifetime, which I think are, you can't separate them, right? It's like the things that I've experienced growing up in Aspen absolutely affected my life in ways that I can't calculate, but I can see it in my own behavior, like just like we're talking about, you know,
right.
Whether it's fearlessness or this, that, or the other. A willingness to fail, a willingness to give away information freely, things that I don't see as much in the world today. And maybe that's a byproduct of the time period that we all shared being in that place.
It is. It's Tom Crum. It's John Denver. It's Sandy Monroe. It's the people.
Sandy Monroe.
It's the people. Will. It's the people that we grew up with that were the adults that were sort of shaping who we were on our own, you know?
Well, and like Andy and I were talking earlier, it was a much simpler time. I hate to say it, but nowadays, you know, and I've said this all the time, you know, Andy Warhol kept talking about his 15 minutes of fame, and I would knock that down to 15 seconds of fame on his Instagram these days, you know? Everybody is more into taking selfies with a bear than seeing a bear, you know what I mean? Right. And it's just changed. It's interesting.
Yeah, I agree with you. There's been a minimalization of experiential value and more of a focus on a recorded experience so that you can come back to it, which is not the same thing.
Well, that
which also carries its own separate incentive, really. I think a lot of these people, like even my kids, all they're into is like, oh man, I want to be Insta famous, or I want to be an influencer or something. And it's like, well, okay, but why do you want that? I don't understand.
Here's how it translates for me. Like, I'm still a musician. I'm still a guitar nut. So my Instagram feed is flooded with guitar players. If I see a great video and I save it, because of the flood of information that goes through the internet every day, I know in the back of my head, well, there's going to be another great one tomorrow.
Yeah.
Whereas when we grew up, there was no promise of that.
Yeah.
Like the experience was sort of valued in a completely different way because it was more singular.
Let me put it this way, succinctly, remember when you would go and buy an album for that one awesome song?
Yeah,
right. And then you suffered through the rest of the album. You know, that doesn't happen these days. See, these kids will be like, you know, well, I like that artist, and here's 15,000 other artists just like that you might like as well. And it's like,
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, the oversaturation of information has made choices not particularly special anymore.
Man, I think you nailed it right there.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how I see it anyway. And I think that that's unfortunate because the most memorable things that happen in life are the things that are singular. If they're interchangeable, one awesome video that you see the next day and there's going to be 10 more in the next 7 days that come across your feed, then how is it that they have any lasting memories in your life, you know?
Right. It's just, it's funny, but that is part of, everybody's all hyped up on AI and all this stuff, but that is part of the problem with the AI is that if it's not closed and you're not using it for a specific trained thing that you're using it for, you're dealing with a cesspool of information, which is really hard to deal with to get what you want. You know what I mean? Because you're saying, no, not like that, but like this. And it still wants to put, and so you, it's weird, but it also is an example of our society in a sense too, because what do you do with it? Are you doing evil stuff or are you doing good stuff? It really kind of, it's funny how a technical thing is showing humanity, exposing humanity, because it's about how you use it, not what it is. It doesn't do anything until you do something with it. So we're starting to see our worlds show us, you know what I mean? I feel like it is our, it's weird because we have our foots in the old days, and so we can step back, and I feel for the generations of today, because I don't know if they can step back, because that's what they know. That's it. They just grew up with the phones like this. I mean, these phones are more powerful than the computers we had when we were kids.
Yep.
The phone.
100%.
And the cameras are better than some of the, I mean, it's amazing the stuff you can do.
No, and I think that there is something, you mentioned this earlier, but I think that there is something about process that we've lost in society because of the advancement of technology, which has massive upsides, obviously. But on the other end, you know, from my perspective, if you had to learn how to develop film for a still camera and be in a dark room and put it through the chemicals, and you had to put it in the developer only for so long, because otherwise the grain got too much or it oversaturated or whatever, and that there was an understanding of how you built the boat, so to speak.
Yeah.
And then you had much more flexibility in all kinds of other problem solving. It was another example of cognitive thinking, right, which I think we've also lost in society. Yeah. It's like, get to the answer, you know? And it's a real conflict, because in my business, in any business where there's money, it's a result-oriented industry.
Right.
It just happens that I get paid a very reasonable amount of money for my artistic ability, but it's also built inside of a technical structure. I have to be on time. I can't spend more than a certain amount of money. The interpretation of how you get a great performance is so varied a topic that we could spend about, you know, a six-part podcast on that alone.
Yeah.
So,
well, like, you said it earlier when you said there, it comes with expectations. I mean, that's
always.
Nailed it, you know.
All the money, man. Like, I mean, that's the answer to everything in capitalism.
But the funniest thing is, though, is some of the best art and the best stuff out there, it has nothing to do with money. You know,
absolutely.
You mentioned process. You know, I love the process. Like, one of the things that I do on the side is I do woodworking, you know. And you talk about process. I use the stuff that, you know, the processes that were in use in the 1700s, you know, and
That's awesome.
The finished product is so different from what you would find, you know. I'll just show you, like, you go down to TJ Maxx and spend $15 on a jewelry box. It doesn't compete with something like that, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Because there's process and there's actual energy that you transfer into whatever that art is, in your case, film or whatever it is, that it's a piece of you that goes into it.
Yeah,
you can't
buy
that at TJ Maxx for $15. Or,
well, you can't even get any more with guitars. I've got several guitars that are from the 50s, and I got one from the 30s. They're all made from templates, but they're all handmade. Big difference between that and a CNC routed body or net that comes out of the factory.
Exactly. Right. Yeah.
And it's what you're talking about. It's that individual attention to detail that you cannot get with the fast track process.
Yeah. And you know, like, you get down to it, using my chisels, sometimes we're talking about carving something down to an atom's width, you know,
right?
And you can only feel that in the process, but you do that on the CNC carver, like you said, it just routes it out, and then when it's done, the robot goes back, you know.
Well, and ten of them will be exactly the same, whereas you using a planer is a judgment call.
Mm-hmm. And every single
humanity,
one is
right?
somewhat original.
Yeah. And it's wrong. That's what I love
wrong.
About it.
Yeah, right.
Because it'll be a perfect 90 degree angle coming off of a router. But, you know, oh, I screwed it up that one time. I got to shave it back down and make it just a little bit off that angle, you know, and make it work.
Yeah.
You know? I feel like the trick is it's always been the artists and the creatives that pushed society and changed them and influenced them and whatever. And I feel like it's our generation that needs to sort of take an appreciation for the old and an appreciation for the new.
Yes.
And how do we mesh them together?
Right
now they're all free for all and they're all just
make sure that food. Conventional wisdom is not lost on the next generation. That's my life goal for my children, at least.
I have a solution which we can address in the next part two of the podcast. Okay, ready?
Yeah.
Yep.
Ready? Okay. Overhaul the education system, pay teachers more,
yep.
Prioritize the education of the next generation by bringing in people who have actually done the things to teach the kids how to do the things to meld those two ideas together. Very simple.
Well, the
you
other
just
thing
explained
too,
kind of what we went through as growing up, you know.
I think the other thing too is not everyone is good at what they think they want to do or what they've seen, and the trick is to find out what are they good at, what are they talented at, and how can they push that into something, as opposed to here's math, here's this job, here's that, go do this. So you're more or less finding out what a natural talent the person has and directing them in that. Do you know what I mean?
But now I'm going to challenge that.
Yeah,
I'm going to challenge that, and I'll put this out there right now with Richard Feynman. In physics, he ended up teaching himself physics and then taught other folks because he didn't feel that he was good at it when he was younger. So nobody directed him in that direction. He discovered it on his own. So you got to be careful. It's if you watch the movie Gattaca, they kind of go into that.
But no, part of it is giving a playground for people to play with the talented folks like Adam's talking about. And having that playground around, but having those people that are talented, being able to see where these strengths and weaknesses are. If you were a kid and you were younger, I mean, Miss Smith taught a lot of people and pulled a lot of people into certain directions. And if it weren't for someone like that, I don't know. And I feel like now it's tougher to find that. The atmosphere is so stressed out that it's not really open. We were in such an easy, playful place, whether it was a community school or Aspen High School, you know?
Well, I think there's other barriers to entry now that didn't exist when we were younger.
Right.
There's the sociological, psychological reality for a lot of kids that they may never get to own a house.
Right.
They may never get, like, they're, I don't know how I was going to buy a house coming out of university, college, but it was nowhere near what it is now. You know, like there are crises that are barriers to entry psychologically for kids. And so there's already a defeated, hopeless air about certain things in life that traditionally have been things to achieve for, especially in North American society. That's one problem. The next problem is just about being able to encourage people to think about using the college experience to find their passion, as opposed to how do I get a job that's going to pay enough money to help me live on my own so I'm not living with my parents when I'm 40.
Right.
A lot of people don't want to do, you know.
Right.
And that's not the focus I had. Like when I was at NYU and AFI, it was a bit of a free-for-all. It was like,
go
out and take cameras into the streets of New York and shoot stuff. And that's what I wanted. I wanted the freedom to be able to discover things that I hated, discover things that I liked. I wasn't worried about earning a living. I figured I'll get to that later.
Right.
But like my 18-year-old kid is just in this last half of his first semester in college now. And all he's worried about is like, how do I get a job when I get out of here? And it's like, I don't think that's right.
No, you know? You're right. It's not. It's not. You need to be in that mode of exploring and finding and developing what is your direction. You know,
there's another part of that too, and I think this will probably take us past time in terms of discussion. But what I've seen from my kids, and Adam, I've got one right there with you. He's in his second year of college. But what they have both explained to me is, you know, I work remote and I work from home, and I've worked hard for a long time. You know how it is to get from point A to point B in your career. It doesn't just happen overnight. You know, the first thing my kids said to me was, well, I'll just get a job like you and I'll work from home. It's like, yeah. That didn't awesome. Just happen. You know?
Wow.
And then the second thing is,
that's great.
Is that, you know, we've never really crossed that barrier into the great 1% or whatever. We were always struggling, as most Americans are. And my kids look at that and they've both told me, they say, you know, why do I want to do what you guys have done? You work your asses off. You don't ever get anywhere. You never get ahead. Right. Why would I want to do that?
Right.
You know, and to me, it's just like,
and I agree with that, by the way. Like, yeah. I tell people, don't do what I did. You know, you want to go slave away on sets for 16 hours a day, working until 5 o'clock in the morning on a Friday night, like.
But don't you think that built character?
Oh my God, you sound like my grandfather.
It builds character, Andy, but all three of us, it also gives us the gray hair. So
yeah, and I've had my gray hair for a long time. You know, I would say, here's what I would say is that the message of, and maybe this is a good place to wrap it up, but like America is built on the idea, at least when I grew up, that if you worked hard, you could get anything. And that I did not find that to be true.
Nope.
Right. It's not
anymore.
It wasn't true when I grew up. It's definitely not true now. Yeah. All people are not created equal. And that if you work hard, you can still struggle your whole life, no matter how good your work ethic is. So I think the trick is that I've only realized as I, you know, creeping up on 60 is like, you know, we have a finite time on this earth. Find something that you feel passionate about doing as a career.
Yeah.
And chase that. The money will come. You know, we as your parents will help you as much as we can because we're not trust fund babies either.
Right.
And, you know, because otherwise your life literally goes before your eyes, and before you know it, you're in a place where like, now I've got health issues and like, why was it really worth it? And I'm not sure it was, you know.
By the time we retire, like, we're gonna need wheelchairs just to get around.
I think to bring this back to the beginning, I would say that for me, what Aspen gave me was a sense of adventure. And I applied that adventure right into my career. And that's how I got to where I am and what I've done. And you can't really ever plan anything that happens. It's just you go an opportunity and you go check it out and it turns into the thing, you know, and it's like, so it's the adventure, the sense.
I went the total opposite way and went the corporate route, the corporate ladder. But one thing I can say on the light side of that is that I never gave up the dream. That's why Andy and I are always working on stuff. And we're always doing awesome things, you know, animations, short films, whatever, you name it.
I think it's critical. I just think everybody being able to find their outlet in an artistic way is an absolute necessity to being able to have a fulfilling existence, because the rest of it sometimes is not so fun. You know, it's like you got to go and earn money. You got to support your family. You got to pay a mortgage. Next time we can get into this more, but I'm now making a career change again at my time in my life, which is driven by pandemics and labor strikes and, you know, all kinds of things changing in my industry. So that sense of adventure that you talk about, I still have it.
Yeah.
Like, I still believe anything's possible. I still believe if I apply myself and I'm passionate about something, which I can talk more about next time, that I can achieve it. And I'm in the middle of that transition right now.
Yeah, I feel like the adventure is what saved us. The ability to
I agree.
See it and
to be all in, whether I win or lose.
Right.
Honestly, because life is a bit of a gamble anyway. So, like, why not be all in? One's going to bet on me, but like, if I can't bet on myself, how am I going to convince anybody else to believe in me?
Right.
And Aspen gave me a lot of that.
Yeah.
Just by affirming, that, hey, when I ask for something, I'm going to receive something. Mm-hmm. And that's not the way it is in all cities and towns across the world.
Right. Yeah. Thanks for listening. The authors of Growing Up Aspen would like to thank you, and would like to also thank the Aspen Times and the Aspen Daily News for giving us materials for our book, Growing Up Aspen, Adventures of the Unsupervised, which you can get at twistandturnpress.com and any local bookstore. Thanks.